Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
You all know Mandisa Thomas. She has been here before. She is amazing. And I don't think she needs me to read the bio, but I'm still going to do it in case someone here for some unknown reason doesn't know who she is. So Mandisa Thomas is the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers. She currently serves on the board of American Atheists and the American Humanist Association and facilitates the Morrow Georgia chapter of Recovering from Religion. In 2019, Mandisa was named Freedom from Religion Foundation's Free Thought Heroine and was the recipient of the Secular Student Alliance Backbone Awards. So Mandisa, thank you so much for being here today with us. It's such an honor to have you back, and just welcome. Welcome to this session.
Thank you, Amaya, and thank you to everyone at Recovering from Religion. It is great to be a part of the family. And welcome to everyone who has joined in on the presentation this evening. I saw a lot of very familiar faces, not just familiar faces, but some of my BN family, and I appreciate you all being here. For everyone who is new to this particular type of event, thank you so much for joining. And I hope that you're able to get some new insight and information that you may not have thought about before. So the topic of my presentation this evening is engaging the Black religious community. And, you know, for those of you who are familiar with my presenting style, you know, it's very, very casual. It is filled with some information. It is filled with information. You know, it is definitely full of thought-provoking points. And, you know, I try to incorporate a little humor as well. So, you know, just get ready to laugh a little bit and, you know, let your hair down. And the main theme for our organizations is support. So I just want everyone to know that I hope everyone does feel supported, and that if you are ready to lend your support, then we also encourage that as well. So I am going to share my screen again and start my presentation. You know, I try to do something a little not flowery, but you know, here we go. So here is, engaging the Black religious community. This is a joint presentation, of course, with Black nonbelievers and Recovering from Religion. So just a bit more about me. You know, I'm the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers, as Amaya just read to you. For those of you who aren't already aware, I am a New York City native, born and raised, moved to the Atlanta, Georgia area in 1997 with my family, and have been here ever since. I actually had a pretty non-religious upbringing. It was pretty secular. It was very, very Afrocentric and Black-centered. And I think that's very, very important to mention, because there are, you know, in engaging the Black community, I think it is important for those of us who have been fully engaged with the Black community to actually speak on this particular subject. At the time that I started, that Black Nonbelievers was formed, and also when I started volunteering with Recovering from Religion, I was working full-time at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as the event services manager at their conference center. I have since resigned from that job and have taken on activism full-time for the past 2 years. It is a decision that I haven't regretted since. And it is where my time, I find, has been the most important to dedicate to. So you'll see me here at Black Nonbelievers representing, as well as, growing the organization, you know, so on and so forth in the future. And like Amaya said, I currently also serve on the boards for American Atheists and the American Humanist Association. I previously served on the boards for Foundation Beyond Belief, the Secular Coalition for America, and the 2016 Reason Rally Coalition. I have been a group leader for Recovering from Religion in Morrow since 2013. So that has been for the past 7 years. Of course, the in-person events are on hold. Hopefully we'll be able to start those again soon, but of course that is, pandemic circumstances withstanding. I was a recipient of the Backbone Award for the Secular Student Alliance in 2019, FFRF's Free Thought Heroine. For those of you who aren't familiar, that is the Freedom from Religion Foundation. I was also the Unitarian Universalist Humanist Association's Person of the Year in 2018. And I am happy to announce, for those of you who aren't aware, I am one of the co-recipients of the 2020 Harvard Humanist of the Year Award, along with Sikivu Hutchinson and Ijoma Oluo. That presentation will take place this Thursday from September 17th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time via the American Humanist Association's Facebook page. You can also join via Zoom. I highly recommend you tune in and lend your support. Again, I've said this before. I don't do what I do for the recognition, but when it comes, I definitely appreciate it. And if you look down to your right, there is another way to support my activism through my Patreon. I blog over there. You know, I share exclusive information for as little as $1 a month. You can support my activism there, because it is 18 or 21 and over. Some of the content, you have to type in that link directly. You cannot just search it. You have to have the direct link, just an FYI. So getting into that. So with that being said, I have been actively involved in this movement for going on 10 years. And it has been quite the experience. It has been quite the education. It has been quite the engagement. It has allowed me to really cultivate some good relationships with my fellow non-believers and atheists, as well as progressive believers. And that's something that I'm very proud of in this work. But in asking the questions, talking to believers, are you crazy? Like, why would we want to talk to believers after we have come to our position, right? You know, we have to deal with this stuff on a regular basis. And for those of us who represent the Black community or other people of color, you know that there are extra challenges to this. Now, I can't see the chat right now, but show of hands, who might be familiar with this particular scenario? This was actually an event that took place. This was an actual incident. And, who here might recall where this incident, where this picture might have come from? I'm going to just give it a couple of minutes, because for those who don't know, I'm going to tell the story in a moment. Okay, so hopefully the moderators are able to monitor the chat there. Okay, cool. So some people may know. So for those who aren't aware of where this picture comes from, it was taken at the 2015 Atheist Alliance of America's conference that took place at the Crowne Plaza Atlanta Airport here in Georgia. Interestingly enough, there were two corresponding events that were taking place at the same time. The first was a multi-level marketing event. The second one was a Women of Color in Ministries conference. Yay! So here you had basically two religious groups that were in the same space and an atheist group, right? And so the executive director of the organization at the time thought it might be a good idea to perhaps engage the women of color in ministries in particular, because that was around the time that, you know, the Black Lives Matter issues were really starting to ramp up. You know, that was the, you know, that was, well, 2014 was when Mike Brown was killed, but it was still gaining momentum. So it was an opportunity, especially as intersectionalism became a huge topic and social justice became important topics within the secular community, the executive director thought it might be a good idea to perhaps engage the religious folks on common ground. So, as I said before, at the time I was still working, but I was reading on Facebook about how when the atheist tables, when the conference tables were being set up, how the religious folks were walking by and actually rebuking the tables, and how they were praying over them, and they were being quite a bit obnoxious. So I said, well, wait till we get there. That might be quite a shock. And so the organizers decided, hey, well, we're going to put y'all right by our registration table. And so that kind of excited me a bit because, you know, if you know anything about me, confrontation is something that I am not afraid of. And I also try to, you know, resolve conflict as much as I possibly can. But yes, part of what was, you know, part of what was exciting about this was perhaps, you know, seeing more, you know, getting to, you know, have more Black folks in the same inner space see our organization and see what we do. And so that's what we did. Interestingly enough, though, there was at least one woman who actually recognized me. And I thought, wow, that was interesting. She said, I know you. You're the president of the Black Nonbelievers. I was like, wow, that's interesting. And she said, well, have a blessed day. She's like, oops. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know whether that was sarcastic or not, but, you know, it's whatever. And interestingly enough as well, we had some really, really good dialogue with some of the other attendees from that conference. We shared some common ground with some of the attendees, especially some of the women. And we got some really interesting questions. There were some folks who were genuinely curious about our position. There was one young lady who actually asked how not to offend her atheist friend when he sneezes. So there was some genuinely good questions that we got. We had some good engagement during the event. Of course, we had some side eyes, some eye rolls and such, but, you know, we expected that. But here's where we come to this particular picture. On the last day of the conference, I was at the table. And this woman walks up. She's actually looking the table up and down. You know, she's given, you know, she's eye rolling. She's side eyeing and everything and looking like, well, you know, what the hell is this? And so as I started to introduce myself, she turned away and started talking to someone else. And so after a few minutes, she comes by and says, oh, well, I just want to know why. I don't understand. Like, what is this? So in my usual fashion, I introduced myself. I said, hi, I'm Mandisa Thomas. I'm the founder and president of Black Nonbelievers, and began to explain the mission and the premise of our organization. So she immediately fires back and says, oh, well, you know, I'm well aware, you know, of atheism. You know, I have a degree and atheism is just another religion. And she said it just like that. She was being quite rude. And so I responded to her. I said, ma'am, you know, you really don't have to be disrespectful. And she said, well, I'm not being disrespectful, but since you are raising your voice at me, then I'm going to raise my voice at you. And what followed was she was so irate. And she said she could not believe that as a Black woman that I had the nerve to identify as an atheist in front of these white devils, and told me I had a slave mentality. I mean, she said she felt sorry for my mama and my kids. I mean, it was just, it was awful. And I honestly don't know how I maintained my composure, because really I was ready to snap her neck off. But, you know, I just responded with, well, you know, ma'am, what, you know, which God are you talking about? You know, let's try to dissect this here, since you want to go there, right? But she became so belligerent that some of the attendees of our conference started to video record in case they needed to call security. And so, you know, she marched off in a huff. She said she was going to bathe me in the blood of Jesus and everything. And so, you know, that was just, you know, one of the more crazy experiences. It certainly has not been the first of its kind that we've had to endure since being active. However, it was one of the times that stood out the most, because this is an example of what we anticipate dealing with and also what some people actually do deal with. And it's significant because this woman actually, everything that she embodied, many of your fundamental Black Christian thoughts about atheism, not only about rejecting God, but also rejecting God as being Black. That somehow, you know, I was betraying my community, and so this is a lot of what we, you know, this speaks to a lot of what we have to deal with. And so sometimes, you know, we ask ourselves, like, why would we want to deal with this, right? You know, we've already come to our positions, you know, and so we found peace in that, but there is still some apprehension in having to engage, you know, believers who are especially fundamental and especially coming from, you know, the Black community. And so we're going to go into next why religion defines the Black community, because we often get this question, well, I don't understand how and why so many Black folks still believe in, you know, the oppressive religion of, you know, the slave masters, right? That's a question. Even though, you know, there are a number of, you know, believers, you know, of all backgrounds, but when we're talking about the Black community, we must understand why religion defines us. So even though the Black community makes up about 12% of the U.S. population, there's still about 79% that identifies as religious. So we're talking about a still high number of believers in comparison, even though the number of religious nuns is rising. I think according to latest data that it's close to 30%. But those numbers are still pretty high within the Black community. Also, as I mentioned, slavery in the United States forced African captives to accept Christianity. So of course there was some irony in this woman saying that I had a slave mentality. But, you know, we can discuss that a bit later. Also, the Black church became a primary support system once slavery ended and once institutionalized racism was enacted and enforced. So we must consider all of the institutional factors and how the church became so prevalent within the Black community. So taking that, taking that historical, perspective, hopefully we'll try to, you know, and this isn't just commonplace. This isn't just a case in the United States. If you see in other countries, especially where there are predominantly Black populations or populations of people of color, religiosity is very, very high. So we also have to have the conversation about why, or discuss why it may be a bit harder to discuss atheism in particular within the Black community. And like we said, you know, there are very, very strong emotional ties to the church and religion. Much of that is due to the tradition. The church has become quite a source of you know, entertainment and representation within the Black community. Much of the politics and much of the politicians, many of the politicians in the Black community still tout their religious beliefs. We've certainly seen this in recent times. It's very, very overwhelming. And we have to take into consideration that even though the Black atheist demographic or the non-religious demographic is rising, there's still a smaller percentage of us that are openly identified as compared to believers. So, that does warrant some consideration there. Also, many atheists are still processing their grief, or those who are questioning their fundamental religious upbringing. So that is very, very emotional for a lot of people. And so therefore, in trying to convey that, it can still be very, very difficult for those who don't think that there is trauma associated with leaving religion. There are many of us that can attest to how that process works. And so in processing that grief, and sometimes, especially when you lose your family members and your friends as a result of that, that is also very trying emotionally and mentally. So actually getting up the courage to discuss that while you're still dealing with that can be very, very difficult. And also, once again, the Black community largely still associates atheism with rejection of Blackness, in addition to the rejection of not just the religion and the church and God. So those are many of the, you know, those are some serious things to consider. I want to make it clear that this is not a referendum on how to try to beat up the Black religious community, because and while it may be tempting, you know, and certainly many of us have been through that phase of we want to make sure that we shout out how bad religion is to the world. And it is absolutely it is certainly understandable. In my role as, you know, as an organizer and as an organization leader, these factors must be taken into consideration. So I'm going to talk a bit about BN's engagement with the Black community, because we've had them. You know, we in the past almost 10 years, we haven't just engaged the secular community. We have actually gained some interest and have piqued the interest of the Black community at large, including some many that are believers. So in our work, we do host public meetings and events, primarily in person, and they're open to the general public. They are primarily support for our fellow atheists. However, they are open to anyone who is willing to engage and who is willing to learn, and just on your basic human level. If you're coming to be antagonistic, then of course we monitor that and we manage that part. But yes, we host a number of events. We also collaborate on other events. We have participated with a number of other events where we have been able to express our non-religious or atheist point of view. We also have numerous media features, CNN, for example, Playboy, The Humanist, the AJC, radio appearances and interviews. We've done quite a few of those. Also, our latest billboard campaign, and you can see the images here. This was covered by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution when they debuted back in August, and it was a the billboard campaign was a direct result of the Black family discussion that we hosted in July, which is up on our YouTube channel if you would like to watch it, in which we discussed Christianity, white supremacy, and true liberation for the Black community. These billboards are still up and in the Atlanta area. And we kindly do ask for your support to keep them going, as well as possibly expanding them to different cities. You know, it's a simple message: free yourself from religion and find true liberation. There is a link that there is a website that links directly to that discussion and some verbiage there. So much like other organizations, we have started more mass marketing and trying to engage, and especially to find those who are on that fence or those who have left religion, but they didn't realize that there were organizations like us out there. Also, we volunteer with other organizations, once again, with Recovering from Religion and other secular organizations, as well as progressive religious organizations. I've participated in some events with the Religious Freedom Center as early as this year, and vice versa. We have invited them to engage with us, and they've been wonderful. So, you know, we have made some really, really good headway as an organization with the Black community. And as you can see here, you see one of our exhibitor tables. This was actually from our cruise last year, and that was also a very, very interesting experience to see, to engage and meet some folks who were kind of either surprised that we were there, and some who were actually more excited. So you just never know what you might get when you engage. So it is important to find communities and get involved. Before you take that leap, before you take that step to actually engage or to actually have a discussion with either family members or friends or others within the Black community, I think it is very, very important that you are well prepared and well armed with support from others. You don't have to go through this alone. That is going to be. I'll probably say this a couple of times throughout this presentation. So finding communities of non-believers, and of course these are from this one picture was from Dragon Con from last year. The second is from our cruise, and also this was a holiday celebration along with the other Atlanta area secular groups. And so just convening and engaging and finding yourself, finding that space, again, where you can find others that you can engage and connect with is extremely important, because what this does, it helps you to, it helps you to find other perspectives and find multiple ways and, talk to other people about their experiences, what it was like either leaving religion or perhaps never having it in the first place, how they engage the world at large, and also how we achieve unity in that, especially as non-believers. So I always recommend find your tribe. I know that that's probably more simplistic, but it is extremely important that you utilize the support systems that are out there, finding communities, because you don't have to go through this alone. I know that when you leave, especially a fundamentally religious environment, you have this feeling that there is no one else, that you are isolated, that you're going to go through this alone, which is perhaps a fear that was instilled by your religious community. That is very much a reality for many people, but that we are out there, and it is important to get involved. So we're going to talk a bit about how to handle difficult conversations, whether you initiate them or not. And I will tell you, I think most of us will agree that for the most part, we tend to try to leave, religious folks alone, right? Even if we are, unsettled or irritated with the beliefs, for the most part, we're like, hey, live and let live. You can believe what you believe as long as you are not infringing on my rights to not believe. But more often than not, we are asked the question as to why we don't believe. And sometimes it can be a very challenging or difficult, circumstance or difficult, you might feel a bit uncomfortable there. But this is the best way on, these are just some tips on how to handle these conversations. One, try to assess the environment. Try to assess if the person might be willing or open to objective dialogue or not. That is extremely important. Also, you want to assess your emotional and mental state of mind. It is important for us to try to gauge where we are at the moment. You know, because as human beings, life happens. You might have had a bad day at work. You know, something else might have occurred that day. And these are things that you may want to consider in case you find yourself in a position where you are, you are asked to explain your position or engaging a conversation about religion. It is important for assess the environment, assess the person, and also assess you. Because that is actually those are going to be very, very important. Take a deep breath. It is okay to try to remain calm in this situation sometimes it may be described as a situation because you never know how it's. Sometimes we feel like we're about to go to war. Am I right or wrong? So try to take a deep breath and also try a tactful approach if possible. Try to be tactful. You can ask questions of the person, of the believer, or the person who is asking you. You can certainly ask, there are plenty of questions that you might be able to ask them, but try to be tactful. Now, mind you, tact doesn't always mean nice. Tact may be direct, but at least try to be a bit diplomatic if you can. But if you find that after all of that it isn't going well, disengage. Do keep in mind that you are not under any pressure to explain your position, especially if you don't have to, and to someone who is being completely closed-minded. You don't have to give them that space. You don't have to give them that energy. So if you see that you've made a few points and the person or people aren't listening to you, it is okay to disengage. It is okay to stop the conversation because you realize it isn't going to go anywhere. And perhaps it may be a good idea to try it again later. But if it isn't going well, just stop. You do not have to put that pressure on yourself or put that weight on yourself to explain your position or even fully argue with folks who aren't going to get the message. And if you need help, please know that we are here for you. As I said before, you don't have to go at this alone. These are what our organizations are for. For those who are questioning, for those who are, who are fully there, but who've never had to think about why they should have to explain their positions. And of course, it's always good to have backup, right? For us, we are a very, we are a very evidence-based community. So we try to give information to back up our positions and everything that we say. Usually on the other side, it's the opposite. And so it's important to note that. But here are some really good, Recovering from Religion, of course, is a very, very good organization for that support, as well as Black nonbelievers. We are, again, very support-based, very education-based, and we help people try to manage that process. Also, another entity is Street Epistemology. Some of you may be familiar with Anthony Magnabosco and his Street Epistemology. He has a number of videos available where he, as well as others, are actually talking to believers about why they believe what they do. For some of you, that may be of interest. You may be, you may be ready to engage more folks in conversation about why they believe what they believe. And I do think there are some videos on there where they are talking to Black folks. I certainly think you should watch those if possible. But again, it is important for you to know that we are here for you to lend that support. And also, if you just feel like, I just need to vent, it may not be the right time to have those conversations. It is important, though, that, again, you have the information on your side in order to have a fully, a fully productive conversation. Now, I will tell you that I can share an experience that happened a few years ago where I tried to engage a believer. This was a Black man out of Florida. And in engaging him, he was starting to become really, really condescending and such. And so it didn't end well. And, his wife tried to come for me to say that, you're talking to a man and saying he's this and his mom just died. Well, first of all, I didn't know that. that wasn't for me to know. I'm not clairvoyant. I'm not God. But, he was one. And actually, a few years later, he found me and apologized for that conversation and how he acted. And he said he was going through a rough time. He actually respects people who don't believe. He thinks people should be free to believe or not believe what they want, and that his behavior was inexcusable. Now, it's important to share that because even if we may be having a difficult conversation at the time, especially with other Black folks, it doesn't mean that the information may not resonate at the time. It may come through later. And this is why I suggested that a tactful approach is important. Because you just never know who you might be reaching. And also, it's important for us to speak up because, again, for those people who are still in the closet, who are still on the fence, and also for those who have felt isolated, you just never know what type of engagement you might be able to generate from them as well. And if all of the engagement always went perfectly, without a hitch, that would be wonderful. However, we are talking about communities that have been further marginalized. And again, taking into consideration the institutional factors, we are still seeing a lot of racial unrest, a lot of calls for reform, economic reform, reproductive justice reform, racial reform. And a lot of that ties into people's values. What they believe, what they don't believe, how important the Black community may be to them. And for many in our community, that ties into church and belief. And so for non-believers who are active, in Black Lives Matter and more Black Lives Matter initiatives and also racial justice initiatives in particular, this can be a very, very tough conversation to have. But it isn't impossible. And I want even the white people on this meeting to understand that it isn't an impossible conversation. However, to be condescending is, can be a bit, you might want to check yourself on that, especially in engaging the Black community overall. So, it is important to, for one, I think, and I could be wrong on this, but I don't think I am. But it is important for one to listen to those of us who are directly engaging these communities. It is always possible for us to work together on these things, but do understand that those who of us who are directly involved in it and who are directly immersed within the Black community would have, you know, some really, really valuable insight and information to share. And we also offer that because we want more people speaking up. We want more of us to speak out. We want more of us to engage our communities, especially for areas of improvement. You know, we want people to see us, our humanism, and how our non-belief shouldn't be stigmatizing, right? So, again, it's going to take a joint effort, it's going to take team building, and also a lot of self-reflection where we might be, and also the parts that we play even as individuals and better engaging our communities and how, you know, we can make some serious changes. So I'd like to ask for you to follow and subscribe to be in on social media, wherever you can find us. We are on, not wherever, but these are the places where you can find us. We are on Facebook. We have a public page for Black non-believers. We also have a private group primarily for mainly for those who are questioning religion in favor of leaving, and also you know, for those who are fully atheists or non-believers. So that is a support group. You may also find us on Instagram at Be Non-Believers Inc., at Twitter at Be Non-Believers, YouTube at Black Non-Believers Inc. And as I stated earlier, you can find the Black Family discussion there. It is a two-part discussion that I highly recommend you watch. We also have presentations from the Women of Color Beyond Belief Conference that took place last year, as well as other BN events. And also, please do consider donating and supporting BN at our website, at blacknonbelievers.org. We are also, for those of you who are Cash App savvy, we are available on Cash App at Black Nonbelievers. You may also designate a portion of your purchases at Amazon through Amazon Smile at Black Nonbelievers. Also, for those of you who are my Facebook friends, my birthday fundraiser is still active. We received enough support in total where we have reached our goal. But of course, I don't think there's any harm in asking for more assistance, especially, again, because we have the billboard campaign going and those billboards are not cheap. So just keeping that in mind. Also, you may request a grant from your local foundations to help support us. Also, if your place of work has a charitable giving program, you can select us as a designee. The only exception would be on the federal level. We are not a part of the combined federal campaign as of yet, but many of your many other places of employment, if you do offer a charitable workplace giving program, if they do offer that, you can select us as a designee. We have had some people do that, and it has been extremely helpful to our work. So we appreciate everyone who supports us in every single way to continue our work and also to further engage and our fellow Black atheists, as well as the Black community in particular. So I'd like to thank you all very much. And before we jump into the questions, I'd like to point you to these two events in particular. The first is BN's 10th anniversary celebration that will proceed in January of next year. I just returned from New Orleans this past weekend, where I toured the hotel as well as spoke, with the staff and was briefed on their safety measures, their security measures, and I'm very, very confident in proceeding with this event for next year. You might see some familiar faces on the flyer. One who is Dr. Daryl Ray, who is on this meeting here. Also, Gail Jordan. You'll recognize Anthony Magnabosco, Sakibu Hutchinson, Bridget Crutchfield, Chris Cameron, and Jeremiah Kamara. These have been some of our allies from day one and from the time that they've entered into the community. And I really, really hope that you will consider joining us in New Orleans. If you either cannot attend, or if you're still understandably, you know, concerned about the pandemic. There will be a streaming component that we hope you will support and tune into. I will say that the hotel, and we will be putting out a post about this. The hotel has implemented sanitary stations that include a hand sanitizer, masks, gloves, and wipes. So again, that is that is something that I hope, just one aspect that I hope will be reassuring that. Not just that, not only we, but also the facility is taking to ensure our safety and enjoyment at the event. But we do hope that you will consider joining us, especially if you are missing your secular fam, as many of us are, and you are ready to engage again and safely. We certainly hope you will join us for the event in January. The information is on our website. You can register. There are student discounts available. There are sponsorship opportunities available as well. And also, I'd like to mention the Women of Color Beyond Belief Conference, which was supposed to take place at the end of September, at the end of this month. But of course, we have rescheduled to 2021 because of the pandemic. And so we will be back better than ever in 2021 with Women of Color Beyond Belief. And for those of you who attended last year, you know that it was an amazing experience. The presentations are nice to view online, but I will tell you, there was nothing like being there in person. And again, we say come one, come all for all of our events, and we hope that you do. We have student rates available for that, childcare. We also offer payment plan information. We're also offering payment plans, because just like with anything else, life happens. And if you would like to attend, but yet you can't pay the lump sum all at once, that is certainly understandable. And you can work out an opportunity, you know, you have the opportunity to pay the registration in installments. And I will say that the admission will include breakfast, lunch, and snacks for the conference admission. The full admission will include the reception and the dinner dance as well. So just keeping that in mind there, you know, we do like to take that into consideration, especially for that event. In New Orleans, there's plenty of food options there. So, and if you've never been to New Orleans, I highly recommend it. Or if you have and you've enjoyed it, just come on back and celebrate with us. And so Women of Color Beyond Belief is presented in conjunction with the Black Skeptics Los Angeles and the Women's Leadership Project. And so you will hear once again from some amazing non-religious progressive women of color in this movement, what we are doing to engage our respective communities, and also how the secular community, as well as other communities who are interested, can help support us in our work. So thank you very much once again for joining me and joining us this evening. I know there's plenty of time for questions here, and I think I'm going to stop my screen share here. But thank you all again very much. I hope you found the presentation informative. Now is the time to ask any questions you may have.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much, Mandisa. That was amazing. As always, really, really insightful. I loved it. And we do have a couple of questions. So if you're okay and everyone is happy with this, I'm just going to start asking.
Yes.
So the first question is, I am comfortable engaging with moderate religious people, but how can I talk to extreme fundamentalist religious people?
Is it how do you talk to extreme fundamentalists?
So like with moderate religious people, it's easier, I guess, to talk to. But if you face, if you're in an environment that everyone is extremely, extremely religious, how can you open up the conversation and make it constructive and healthy?
That could be a tough one, because usually I encourage my fellow non-believers to not, engage in any conversations that may cause them anxiety. You know, mm-hmm. I absolutely try not to, You know, I always try to make sure that everyone's well-being is first and foremost. However, if everyone around you is fundamentally religious, I highly recommend, like I said before, finding a community of fellow non-believers, whether it is in person or online, to talk to first, because you can start by asking questions about, you know, perhaps certain other, like maybe certain other religions, or maybe some things that maybe, you know, that's interesting, because there's a lot of programs, there's a lot of books. Many believers, whether they know it or not, are critical thinkers about other areas of life and other subjects, but not their religion. So you could perhaps ask the question about another religion. You know, why don't you believe in that? You know, what makes your particular religion, more special or more believable? Or maybe, kind of just giving some, you don't have to just say that it's outright wrong, even if you want to, but just start by asking those little questions. Or perhaps if you're engaging in an activity together, bringing up some thinking points for them that may be a bit challenging at times, but that might be a good place to start. I hope that helps, because the fundamental aspect can be very, very challenging for folks, and I absolutely don't think that especially if you know that some folks are absolutely going to be obstinate. You know, you just may want to engage with fellow non-believers first before you have that conversation. And again, assess it. If you don't think they're going to be open, then I highly recommend you just refrain, at least for the time being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone else asked a very similar question, which was kind of how to handle their anger when they're trying to practice strict epistemology. But I guess it's kind of a similar answer of first practicing with non-believers or on an online platform. Or is there anything else you would like to add to that?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Yeah, so someone asked a very similar question, just in terms of how can they control their anger when they are trying to practice strict epistemology, which I'm sure a lot of people struggle with. I mean, I do for sure. And I mean, yeah, it's a very common thing. So is there any other tip that you can give specifically for anger, or is it just the same kind of general idea of practicing before?
I would say try to think of some of your favorite things before, and that made me hard in the heat of the moment, but you may maybe try to think of something funny, try to think of something that, might be very helpful to you, as opposed to just trying to get through to them. Because remember, your peace of mind and your well-being is important. So, if you're able to do that in that moment, and you're able to also remember that a person's belief, the one thing I had to take into consideration, that the woman who was trying to berate me, it wasn't simply about me. There was just something about her. And she was absolutely, she seemed to be absolutely angered by the fact that I was so confident in my position, that I was unapologetic. And so with that, and this is a tool that we learned also, like in customer service, if you work customer service or hospitality, sometimes you understand that the person's, even in psychology, or stuff like that, you realize that a person's actions may not be about you, it's about them. So sometimes, even if it's hard not to take it personal, it's best not to take it personal. And, many of us as human beings may be hardwired to say, you know what, but they did it to me, right? Which is understandable. But you can certainly try to remember that their discomfort isn't just about you. It could be something that they've been dealing with for a while, but they have just been scared to confront it. So, if you find yourself in a position where, it's kind of not going well, maybe try to, in addition to taking a deep breath, think of something that might be comforting to you before you continue the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so emotional management, basically. That makes sense. Is there anything that white people should do or should be aware of when engaging with Black believers?
Yes, so there's a lot that you should be aware of. I think it's always important to be very, very careful to not just belittle or berate, you know, many Black believers. And I say this for all of us, because as tempting as it is, you know, that is something that I think we should manage. You know, I don't think we should appease, but definitely manage. And it's again, it's important to understand the role that the church played, even though the doctrine is extremely dangerous. You have to understand the social aspect that it played, as well as the, you know, the political power that it wields, even though it shouldn't have any political power at all. But understanding aspect, and if you are uneducated about the Black community, I highly recommend learning a bit more. And also learning a bit more about racism and how it works and how subtle it may be, you know, and even if you mean well, it is possible that you are still exhibiting racist tendencies, even if you don't intend to. So it is important to just really, you know, start educating yourself, ask questions, but please do not, you know, ask questions of Black folks as if we speak for our entire communities. I know mm-hmm. it can be very tempting, but, you know, having a better understanding as to why the Black community is so religious. And, you know, I know I gave some, you know, some information there. You know, don't be afraid to just, you know, just listen sometimes, take a back seat and say, hey, this may not be my place to speak on this right now. You know, mm-hmm. it is okay. You can decenter yourself in these conversations. You know, you don't always have to speak on them. So that those are just a couple of things to keep in mind. And also, if they aren't aware of Black non-believers, if you're having the conversation and they say they aren't aware of any Black atheists, well, hey, you know, here's an organization that, you know, that you may want to look up, that you may want to find some more information on. So there are a number of things you can do, even if sometimes it means not doing anything.
And you and Candace Gorham several months ago did an RFRX with us about how racism and injustice affect our mental health. And that was very enlightening for me. And it touches on, and the conversation touched on a few things that you mentioned just now. And it kind of helped me down the path of becoming more aware of my own privilege and being able to engage in a healthier manner with people of color. So I'll go ahead and link that into the chat here as well.
Oh, yeah, it was one of my first sessions and it was just so eye-opening and really, really good. We also had Cicel Eric Candace, who is also a really good speaker. So I highly recommend you watch it. It was really, really good.
Yes.
And then the final question we have for now. So if you have any other questions, let us know as soon as possible. Is that in your experience, are religious people happy to engage in conversations related to religion and atheism and agnosticism? Or do you find that there is a lot of pushback from religious people?
So it depends. You know, there are some religious folks who are happy to engage because they think they're going to convert us. You know, there's some, you know, we've I think many of us have, you know, encountered that from time to time. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, it's a mixed bag there. You know, we do have some who, I remember there was an event last year that I participated with in the Atlanta area. And, as soon as, some women, some folks, you know, as soon as some folks, you know, came up to us and I explained, one woman just immediately walked away like, oh, you know, I'm not, oh, I have nothing to say to you. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, whatever. But, you know, so it's been very, very, you know, it's been very, very interesting, the reactions that we've gotten. I would say I hope I answered that question. I'm looking at the chat at the same time, but
I think you did it perfectly. Yeah.
But yes, it's been the reactions have been, you know, they've varied over the years, and they still do vary. So there are, and I think I also find that there are some progressive religious folks who are excited to engage us, you know, because they like to find more common ground. I have, I have engaged some believers who are actually they're actually disgusted with the fundamentalists as well. So we find that common ground, even if they don't identify as atheists, non-believers, humanists, etc., that many of them are very, very dissatisfied with the way the church and the institutions have been carrying themselves. So, it was very, very, it's been, like I said, we've been making some really, really good headway. We've been gaining some good ground on that. These types of things are going to be ongoing, but, you know, I think the more we prepare ourselves, and especially offer community for ourselves, then, we'll get better.
We have one last question, and this has actually come up in a couple of RFRXs, but I'd love to hear how you respond to it out in the wild. How do you respond to folks who say, "I'll pray for you"?
Yeah, so there are a number of things that you can do to that, because that is often offensive, and I think I see that, you know, that you could say, "I'll think for you," and also you can please, if you feel comfortable with letting them know that they are being extremely disrespectful, do that. You know, it is well past the time for folks to understand that religious privilege needs to go away. Surely you can say, "Yeah, whatever," but it is very offensive, and folks need to stop. You know, they need to know that they're being disrespectful, and in some, especially if it's in a place of work, they may need to know that it is a violation of, you know, of HR guidelines. So you know, they may need to know that there could be, you know, procedural or legal repercussions to pushing their religious beliefs. And I am an advocate for all of us standing up for ourselves as much as possible. And that is one way to do that. You can ask them to stop. You know, you can say, "Please don't do that." If they insist, then you have the right to draw some boundaries there. If you find that they are continuously being disrespectful, you may want to limit your communication with them. If they want to know why, you may want to tell them. Because there are some folks that, you know, some folks may have different tolerance levels. Some folks might be able to handle it more than others. But if it's a casual or social situation and people continue to disrespect you, you have every right to know. And or let's say even if it's a work setting especially where religion is supposed to has no place. You do have the right to stand up for yourself in those areas. So, if you can tell, you know, and no is a thing that we're allowed to say. No, thank you. Please do assert yourself.
Yeah, it's like another exercise in learning how to set our boundaries, even with complete strangers, especially with complete strangers too. I really liked how you drew that distinction between work and everywhere else. I hadn't actually considered that before. Me being self-employed, I don't really have a workplace that I go to or share with a bunch of other coworkers. So that's a neat distinction. I like that. Thank you.
Oh, no problem.
Well, Mandisa, we have a hangout, kind of a social time after afterwards. You mind sticking around for a little bit? You got some time to stick around for a little bit and have some
coffee? Yeah, I'll have some time for a little bit. I Perfect. Actually do need to take care of some business after that, but I can stick around for a bit.
Well, thank you. This was a fantastic presentation, Mandisa. I just can't thank you enough for the time that you give us and your work, the advocacy work and the activist work is just such I feel humbled to watch you do your work and just it's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. I know some people ask, where do I get the energy or how do I find the time? And it's like, you know, I had to make the time. And that this was something that was extremely important to me. And, you know, I saw how actually it helped so many others. And so, you know, it is something that I found was worth dedicating my energy to. So, and my life to. So, you know, I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to work with you all, you know, and anyone else who is willing.
Awesome. Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.